Here we are with Lee Jin, general partner at venture capital firm Variant. Lee, it's so great to have you on the Defiant podcast. Welcome.
Thanks so much. It's great to be here.
Yay. Okay. So I'm really excited to have Lee on the show because I've really enjoyed her takes on the different trends that have been emerging around Web3, social media, meme coins, points. I think, you know, you've had a really kind of unique take on these things. So just wanted to take the chance to dive deeper on all of them and also on your story. So first, you know, starting with Variant, I'd love just to get a sense of how you guys invest, like what's your thesis, at what stage do you like to be involved in, and if you're investing in all kind of different verticals of crypto, or are there like specific things that you look at or you don't? And then we can go from there.
Sure. I can give the high level overview of Variant. So we are a full stack crypto venture firm. We are focused on early stage investing across the entire stack of crypto. So everything from new block space, like new layer ones, layer twos, to developer tools, new infrastructure, all the way to financial applications, to consumer applications, is the scope of what we invest in. So it's really focused on crypto, but the entire world of crypto. And we got started 4 years ago, and we're currently investing out of our third fund, which is a $150 million seed fund, as well as a $300 million opportunity fund. And our founding thesis is really around digital ownership and that becoming a greater value proposition to users and becoming a new design space that projects can explore. So if you look across our portfolio, the common theme is really new projects, new networks that are designing around this idea of user ownership in various ways, whether it's user ownership in the form of NFTs, like our portfolio companies Magic Eden and Foundation and Mirror, or using digital ownership in the context of a decentralized financial application like Uniswap or Phantom, or user-owned computing platforms. For instance, we're investors in Polygon and others. And so user ownership is really the thesis of the firm. And the backstory is that I've been investing for a number of years since 2016, have covered both Web2 and now crypto investing, and spent the first half of my investment career really focused on studying marketplaces and other types of consumer networks, which then led me down the crypto rabbit hole, which we can talk about in further detail if you want.
Yeah, I'd love the story on what got you into crypto.
Yeah. So as mentioned, I had been investing in startups since 2016. I joined Andreessen Horowitz in 2016. My background before then was I was building consumer products, consumer mobile apps, and was a product manager at a Silicon Valley-based startup that was building rewards and loyalty programs for retailers and brands. And then I joined A16Z after that company got acquired and began to invest in marketplaces and social and every other consumer category there. So had experience working with the likes of Substack and Reddit and Imgur, HipCamp, and many other types of consumer networks. And that experience really opened my eyes to thinking about the next generation of platforms and networks. And I felt very strongly that the next generation of platforms would be those that empowered their users more and enabled them to not only earn income, but also earn ownership through tokens. And I became increasingly convicted that crypto was the foundation of the next generation of platforms that would encourage users to become owners.
Awesome. So why exactly do you think consumer applications need blockchains? Like why would a blockchain network, a token, make the experience better for users and for maybe builders as well?
Sure. I actually recently gave a talk on this topic at the Boys Club conference in Austin, where I described there being, to date, basically like two major paths for crypto. The original genesis of crypto was around treating crypto as the entire value proposition of why developers and users would want to be there in the first place. So crypto got started with Bitcoin. Bitcoin was really the end in and of itself. It was designed to be sovereign money. And the reason why people wanted Bitcoin was literally because it was crypto for the asset itself. And that really exemplifies one value proposition, which is the asset is why users want to be there. And then in recent years, we've seen another path that products take, which is that they really treat crypto as an underlying technology or as a tool to enable some other type of value proposition for their users. So this is something that I call treating crypto as the why. Treating crypto as the how, not the why. The why is the crypto asset path. And so these products that treat crypto as the how really just treat blockchain as the underlying technological tool to enable something else, but crypto might actually be really invisible to end users. And then I think the third path is something that I call only with crypto, where by building on a blockchain, by having on-chain assets, you're actually enabling entirely new capabilities and new product experiences that users just couldn't access anywhere else. And that might be the ability to port their social graph between different social media clients, or the ability to trade assets that previously weren't tradable before. For instance, like in a new kind of fantasy sports betting app. But in any case, this class of like only with crypto projects takes the building blocks that crypto offers, from the fact that it's global payment rails to new asset creation, new market creation. It takes those building blocks and creates entirely new user experiences around it. And so to your question of like, why even build with a blockchain? I think it's really this third path that excites me, because the possibility is to create entirely novel consumer experiences that didn't exist previously.
So how do you imagine those experiences will be? Like, how does the Web3 native or blockchain-based consumer app model, or if we want to use a specific example, say, why would Web3 social media be a better model than Web2 social media?
Yeah, I think we're already seeing that play out right now, where in Web3 social media, like in the early examples that we have seen of this, including Lens and Farcaster, what's really novel about it is that the social graphs are either on-chain today or could potentially be on-chain in the future. And what that enables for users is that they can use any client and not have to start from a cold start, where all of their connections, their content, their data is already pre-populated into the app because they're built on chain or through an open protocol. And that's a completely different paradigm than Web2 social networks, where all of users' data and connections and identity is in a centralized database. It's owned by a centralized company. So that portability element is one major value proposition of a crypto social network. I've also written about the idea of asset-first social or asset-first approaches to building and consumer crypto, where the leading value proposition is less around portability or interoperability and more around the crypto assets themselves, where products might appeal to users' desire for profit and make certain things within the social networks tradable and create markets around them, so that users can actually earn money from the platform. And so it's more financialized, and a leading value proposition there is that users can actually earn from using a social product. And I don't think these paths are mutually exclusive. I think you're seeing products that combine those elements. But I think in terms of like, why do we need blockchains? I think there's a whole range of value propositions that you can offer to users and developers, from composability and interoperability to appealing to this desire for profit and financial gain through novel assets.
Ready to dive into the world of on-chain derivatives? Cint Futures is your decentralized portal to trading futures and perps with up to 100x leverage. Now live on Blast Mainnet, Cint Futures V3 combines limit orders and concentrated liquidity into a single unified liquidity model dubbed Oyster AMM, offering unparalleled capital efficiency. Earn triple airdrop rewards through an incentive program designed around Blast and Cint Future points. And join the new Trading Grand Prix competition to win a piece of the $500,000 prize pool. Visit synfutures.com, that's synfutures.com, to start your decentralized trading journey today. How do you think these new SocialFi dApps can strike a balance between, you know, this desire for profit and generating an actually enjoyable user experience that's based on real connections? Because I guess it's because of what we saw with Frentech, which was this SocialFi app that really broke out and then kind of fizzled out. And apparently the reason why it broke out was because there was this trading aspect to it where people could buy and sell others' keys, which were like, I don't know, like profiles. And it became super popular, many millions of dollars traded and so on. And then again, like, it just, like, there's nothing happening right now on Frentech. And so I think there's always this risk if you introduce the financial aspect to a social media platform that it will quickly turn into something that people use to make money and not to actually connect. And then the risk there is, you know, it only takes for the next app to launch and provide a higher yield for those users to just move on to the next thing. As you said, like, because there's this portability aspect, it's really harder for apps to retain users and create that, you know, network effect. So you really, you know, I think for builders, you really do need to create an environment that really strikes that balance well. So, you know, from what we've seen so far, what are some of the lessons that you think builders can take and how to reach that balance?
Yeah, I would zoom out and say that to date, we've seen financialization and this appeal to speculation and this desire for profit, it's been a really effective growth strategy for products and networks, like ranging from SocialFi to DePIN networks to even like L1 blockchains. That speculative element is really, really powerful to get users through the door and to try out whatever project you're building in the first place. But that speculation element is not a solve for ongoing retention. Once they're through the door, then the core product and the core value proposition really needs to take over to ensure that people stick around and want to retain. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where a lot of projects have maybe focused less. They've been so hyper-focused on how do we get that growth to a good place and have a ton of like top of funnel users coming in and trying out our product, but they haven't completed that user funnel and built a core retentive product that completes, you know, the growth loop. Mm-hmm. And so I think speculation is this amazing growth hack. It's an amazing new tool in the toolkit that builders have, but they still need to couple it with a core product that has longevity. Otherwise, as you said, users are going to ultimately churn out. And obviously, there are projects out there that do have retentive power, that do have staying power. And I think that's where they had both like the really powerful top of funnel, maybe through a speculative community. But then there's something really sticky and defensible about the underlying product. Maybe it's a network effect or a liquidity network effect or just a really great product. But that has to be in place too.
What do you think will be the the aspect or maybe a combination of aspects of Web3 social that can capture a mainstream audience. I mean, so far there has been growth, but it's been very kind of crypto native, you know, people who understand the power of owning, of self-custody, of owning your data, of, you know, how Web2 has turned exploitative, like, you know, all these things. Crypto native audience is very aware of, also very kind of financially savvy. So, you know, they will understand how, you know, you can trade things, make a profit and be incentivized that way. But a mainstream audience is different. So how do you think Web3 Social can really cross that bridge?
I think it already is. And I think there's two paths to go about it. One is by building just a really great product and a really great experience and a network that people want to participate in. I think this is something that Farcaster has done really well, where it's actually just a better social network if you're really interested in information and knowledge and want to talk to other people. Like, I'm personally spending way more time on Farcaster now than I am on Twitter or any other social network, simply because the content is higher quality and the community is higher quality. So that's one path for crypto social, is just like build a fundamentally better product that exists right now. The other path is by leaning into, I think, the asset focused approach and appeal to users' desire for profit, because that is a new value proposition that Web2 Social doesn't have at all. And so I think a product that does that, that appeals to users' desire for profit, makes it actually profitable to use that network, that can also be a successful strategy. And then thirdly, I would also say, like, I think we have a rather skeuomorphic view of what crypto social is. Like, usually when people talk about a crypto social network, they're envisioning something like Facebook or Twitter, but using blockchain as part of the architecture. And I think that's too skeuomorphic and like just porting what we already know onto new architectural rails. Instead, I would challenge people and say that I think everyone who is like owning crypto tokens or trading meme coins right now is actually participating in Web3 social. Hmm. It's just that there's no platform. Hmm. But they are actually part of a community. They are bonded together with other people who have shared interests and shared values. And these, like, for instance, meme coin communities are just as intense in their affinity and have a culture and a community that is just as vibrant as any normal, you know, social network. Mm. It's just that the product is invisible. It's the product is a blockchain, and like, and the users are networking on chain through shared ownership. And so I think that could be the future of Web3 social as well, where you have these platformless groups of people who are tied together through shared ownership of an asset, but there's no like one standalone product on which all of their interactions are happening.
I love that take. I think it's been super interesting to see this meme coin frenzy as a way of people expressing themselves. And I think, you know, that's come about this cycle because we have many cheaper networks that we just didn't have before. So that make issuing tokens and trading these tokens really cheap. And so you can do things like, you know, like create a Joe Biden token for cheap or trade it for, you know, without spending that much in fees. And it's a way that people have of really expressing themselves. Like it's not about making a business or, you know, doing anything bigger than just like launching a token with a funny name and, you know, connecting with other people who also think it's funny. So mm-hmm. I think you're right. I think it's a great point that, you know, trading meme coins has become a form of social interaction.
Yeah, very, very much so. And I would say the most successful meme coins are the ones that do have that really vibrant community aspect where it's, yeah, there's a strong community. There's a strong sense of shared identity and rituals and beliefs around that meme coin, and it propagates and perpetuates itself really successfully. So to me, like they are essentially social networks.
This is important. Solana is having their largest community conference called Solana Crossroads in less than a month. There will be over 3,000 plus attendees coming to Istanbul. Speakers include Anatoly Yakovenko, Raul Paul, Ansem, and basically everyone you'd want to see from the Solana ecosystem. From what I understand, tickets are almost sold out, so be sure to check the link in the description.
2 things, there's an opportunity for, so right now they're platform less, but is there an opportunity for a platform to actually be built around these interactions?
Yes, definitely. And we're already seeing lots of products being built around meme coins. As I mentioned, like the really successful meme coins have a community behind them. And right now those communities are interacting on social networks like Twitter and Telegram and Discord and Reddit. But I could imagine there being a product that is hyper-tailored and built around meme coin communities as a first-class citizen. I don't know exactly what that looks like. I think it probably entails like having a lot of embedded features that would allow more financialized interactions or help users see the price more immediately or be able to trade inside of the social application. I also think there's room for better discovery experiences of meme coins. Right now, discovery is really fragmented. People are discovering new communities and new meme coins across the internet, on Twitter, on subreddit, etc. But I think there could be a product that really plays a large role in the discovery of new meme coins, where people could come and check out what is a trending meme coin or sort by different filters in order to be able to discover new meme coins. And then I think there's probably an opportunity to create like pretty lightweight tooling around meme coins as well that isn't trying to create a new destination, but just allows for more meme coin functionality within existing applications. So we've seen the rise of Telegram bots that allow people to trade meme coins directly inside of Telegram where their social interactions are already happening. I think that's a really smart idea. And now we're starting to see various meme coin tooling built on top of Farcaster as frames so that people don't even have to leave their social feed in order to do things with meme coins. So I think that fusion of social and trading functionality, we're going to see the marriage of that happen more and more from both directions, from people building entirely new social networks and adding trading features, or starting with trading features and distributing them through an existing social network.
So interesting. Related to filtering and discoverability, there was this controversy, I'd say, around racist meme coins and whether front ends and trading platforms should filter them out or delist them. And so, you know, there's the argument that this is an open, permissionless space. Anyone can issue whatever they want. And then, you know, platforms shouldn't be censoring, you know, these tokens. And then the other argument is, well, they're, you know, private centralized companies. They can filter tokens that aren't aligned with their values and so on. So, yeah, just interested in your take on this, what I think is an unfortunate rise of, you know, racist and misogynist tokens, but at the same time, a reflection of, you know, this is what a free market, like a radically free market looks like, and whether that should be censored at some point in the kind of layer in stack.
Yeah, I haven't been following that development closely, actually, so I didn't know much about that. I think that's a really unfortunate development, but I think the beauty of crypto is that it is permissionless, and anyone who's building on top of these assets can decide for themselves what level of moderation and filtering that they want to do. So For instance, if you look on Warpcast, which is the leading Farcaster client, it's built on top of the Farcaster protocol. There's actually a different number of likes on each post on Warpcast than what is reflected at the actual protocol level, because Warpcast is doing a lot of filtering for bots and spam and things like that, and kind of hiding likes and users that it deems to be spam. And if users don't like that, they can just switch to a different client, a different application, and interact more directly with the protocol information. So I think the beauty and the contrast with Web2 is that users have choice and they have the ability to vote with their feet, what they believe in, and move to applications and interfaces that reflect and map to their own views. But the underlying assets and protocols are all permissionless.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. You also wrote about how meme coins can become an effective go-to-market strategy. And we've seen many or different SocialFi apps built on Base using the DGEN meme coin that started on Farcaster and using that natively. So how does that work?
Yeah, so this was a piece that I published on my newsletter yesterday around meme coins as the new go-to-market strategy. And to contrast, the traditional go-to-market strategy for any software product was you first built a product, then you got users for that product through marketing it, through, you know, doing paid ads or whatever, and creating memes around it. Meme coins can actually invert that go-to-market, where first, as a product builder, you identify an intense community of users that have already formed around a meme coin, and then build a product that integrates that meme coin or has some sort of utility around that meme coin, and then piggyback off of the community that already exists around the meme coin to basically bootstrap your audience. So it's inverting and starting community first and adding utility for that community currency and drafting off of that user base. And we're seeing this being applied by projects across every layer of the stack. In my newsletter, I mentioned that new consumer crypto projects are adding functionality for DGEN, which is a token on Base that initially started off as like a Farcaster community token. There's other examples like BonkBot built a trading bot and aligned itself very closely with Bonk, which is a Solana meme coin. And so by adding support for these meme coins, they're able to really leverage the existing base of token holders who are naturally inclined to find new ways to use their tokens and find projects that are really aligned with their tokens.
It's such a crazy model to you know, if you're coming from Web2 and to think that you can build an app and just embed or include a random, you know, an external token, an external currency into your app, and so bring this community that's already, you know, established around this asset and use that to kind of bootstrap your own growth. It's just like, yeah, it is speaking about your point earlier, only in crypto, you know, that just, you know, could not happen elsewhere. So yeah, I think it's a really fascinating development. I don't remember seeing something like this happening before, where, you know, projects taking external assets and porting them over or like finding use for them in their apps. So yeah, I think it's really, it'll be interesting to watch, but I wonder how sustainable it is. Like, so at first, yeah, like you get that initial kind of user base that'll help you grow. But do you think down the line, these apps will be forced to, or if not forced to, it will make sense for them to issue their own token? Because, you know, it won't be maybe the best for them to be subject to like tokenomics or like monetary policy that is not aligned with their own system. or, you know, they won't be able to control rewards or, you know, do, you know, other things that they might need to do with a native token.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, first I wanted to mention something else that you said, which is we haven't seen this before. I would actually argue we have seen similar types of tactics before in crypto, where previously you've seen things like vampire attacks, where projects would airdrop tokens to people who held a particular token, or you would see developers build on top of different NFT projects and add utility for those NFTs as a way to try and garner the attention of those collectors. I think the way that meme coins extend and build on top of that is that meme coins have a much lower barrier to entry than those previous NFT-related tactics. Like, you know, NFTs typically had a holder base that was 10,000 users or less, and meme coins are much, much more broadly distributed, where the top meme coins are held by millions of people. And so you're getting a much larger base of distribution than you could before. And then secondly, I think it's another way of like kind of attention hacking or growth hacking your project. But instead of creating this zero sum dynamic with the project that you're trying to vampire attack, it's more positive sum where it's not about siphoning users from one product to another, but instead elevating the utility of that meme coin and giving that meme coin a use in a brand new application, which hopefully is a very positive sum relationship. Okay, so putting that aside.
Yeah, great points.
Yeah, you had asked about how sustainable is this strategy? Is this going to continue working? I think right now we're just like so early in seeing this playbook even being tested that it's too early to tell how sustainable of a strategy this is. In my newsletter, I had raised the question of, is this going to reach some sort of saturation where if a meme coin is going to be widely integrated into 100 applications, is the 101st application to integrate it going to get any attention benefit? You could say that basically happened with ETH and Ethereum, where previously, if you wanted to get the attention of the ETH community, you had to be building on ETH and you had to support ETH as the native payment in app. But now that it's so widespread and so many applications exist on ETH, it kind of doesn't make a difference. It's just table stakes now. And I could see meme coins, you know, we're far from that today, but I could see the most popular meme coins that people are trying to draft off of undergoing that same kind of evolution.
Summer.fi is aimed to be the best place to borrow and earn in DeFi. Wonder why? It's a hub to access the best protocols, including Maker, Aave, Ethena, Aina, Spark, and more. The access to all of these protocols is better on Summer because of its risk management automation tools, like stop loss and trailing stop loss, auto buy, auto sell, and take profit. More than 4.6 billion managed, nearly 230 million total collateral automated with 100% success rate. Your DeFi will be better on Summer.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think there could definitely be saturation if like everyone is buying for the same audience, like for the same holder base.
Yeah.
Now, moving on, also related to tokenomics, there have been so many experiments in finding token-based business models and fundraising through tokens. The very first way of distributing tokens was proof of work, obviously, with Bitcoin. Then ICOs really had their moment in like 2017 era with Ethereum. Now we're seeing airdrops and points that lead to airdrops as a way of distributing tokens. Would love your thoughts on, you know, the main lessons from these different models and whether you have an idea of what could come next, like based on the maybe shortcomings of the previous models.
Yeah, definitely. Jesse, my partner, and I published a piece last year called Progressive Ownership, the Next Model for Token Distribution, in which we basically broke down the history of different token distribution models and unpacked like the key lessons learned, the shortcomings, the strengths, and then proposed a new model of token distribution going forward. Hmm. So just like you outlined, to date, there have been basically three major eras of token distribution. One was proof of work, which started with Bitcoin. And proof of work was really good for bootstrapping machine networks of compute that could contribute to a network and do very quantifiable work. Proof of work doesn't work for applications or networks that have very different heterogeneous types of contributions or different types of supply. So if you're building like a social network, I think having like a proof of work kind of token distribution would be really challenging to implement because it would be really hard to quantify everyone's value to the network. Mm. So that was proof of work era. And then after that came the ICO era, which was really, really good at raising capital. It was great for capital formation. But the drawbacks were that it created lack of community alignment because I think they went too broad. And there was also very little accountability on the parts of the projects that raised through ICOs. Not to mention the SEC also came after ICOs as unregistered mm-hmm. securities offerings. But I think in general, like a lot of people who contributed to these ICOs, they were just looking to make a quick buck. They weren't actually looking to be aligned with that community or contribute to it in any way. And so then you saw airdrops coming out of that as a reaction to that, because what airdrops really tried to do is they tried to incentivize usage. They tried to incentivize community alignment, where the pattern was to do these retroactive airdrops for anyone who had ever interacted with a certain project. I think the challenge of doing that, though, is that you end up selecting for different users who are interested in getting the airdrop, not who are actually interested in using your product. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of airdrops created unsustainable growth. They generated a lot of very mercenary users who are very short-term minded. And it also ultimately obscured product market fit for those builders because they weren't sure if people were actually genuinely interested in their products. And so where does that leave us now? I think that leaves us still searching for a playbook for token distribution that gets tokens in the hands of users who are actually going to long-term be aligned with your network. And so Jesse and I wrote this post exploring this new playbook and what that could look like. And we called it progressive ownership, where users sort of step-by-step increase their commitment and thus can increase their ownership stake in a particular network. And this model of progressive ownership works for projects that have product market fit. They already have a base of users. Those users are potentially earning revenue and they can opt to actually turn a portion of the revenue that they're earning and switch it out for tokens in the network instead. So imagine if Zora, instead of getting a revenue share for the mints that you drive, you decide to opt for like a hypothetical Zora token instead. And so it moves us from like an opt-out model of token ownership, which the airdrop era was all about. Everyone got tokens and then some people opted out. Most people opted out of tokens by selling out. Instead, progressive ownership is about opting in to becoming a token holder. So some subset of users, we imagine, who really believe in the future of your project are going to opt for owning tokens over receiving revenue. And I think the benefit of that is that it's going to drive greater retention and loyalty and get your token in the hands of people who actually are long-term aligned with your project. Mm. The drawbacks of this model that we're proposing are probably going to be that it's less good for growth than the airdrop era was, but we question like, you know, did that growth actually lead to anything sustainable versus, you know, actually just building a product that works and making your long-term users owners?
Yeah, definitely an interesting proposition. So the idea is that you have a user base who is maybe I don't know, would it be like part of a DAO, or they'd have like stake tokens and would be earning revenue through that system? And,
The idea is that the tokens would be, would give you probably the right to govern a treasury that is comprised of the revenue that the protocol is earning. So to extend that Zora example, like Zora also earns fees from all mints, and users who opt to get a potential Zora token would then be controlling that treasury of revenue. And so it's really an expression of your belief and your faith that it's going to become more valuable over time, that usage is going to grow over time.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting. Have you seen anyone trying something like that?
We have not. We're very interested in talking to projects who are interested in doing something like this. Mm-hmm. I think this model really works for projects that have product market fit. Mm-hmm. And the universe of crypto projects that fit that description is not huge right now, which is probably why we haven't seen this model. I think this model is also kind of regulatorily complex because it does have this claim on like future revenue, and it has a more direct tie-in to revenue. So I think that's a consideration as well. I think the other interesting development that's happening right now in the ecosystem is projects launching their own meme coin. And that could potentially be a new model for how applications have a token in the future, either launching their own meme coin or being associated with a meme coin, or rolling their own infrastructure, launching an L2 and then having a token associated with that L2. Hmm. I think those are the paths that are like very exploratory and emerging right now for how projects have a token in the future.
So what's the difference between just launching a native project token with launching a meme coin? Is it just, you know, like the name is funny and there's no like apparent initial use case for it?
So I think they would be slightly different in terms of what the token tries to accomplish and the degree of like ongoing management by the team. So a meme coin, in my view, is like just an art project that someone puts out into the world that has no expectation of profit, no managerial kind of oversight by any core team. It's just floating out there into the ether, and it's entirely community directed. That's in contrast to a lot of governance tokens that do have like some tie to revenue and expectation that there's going to be value in the future. Maybe it's through a fee switch or something else. And there is like a team associated with it that's building a product. So I think a meme coin is just like more hands-off and potentially less legally risky. And so like one example of this is Jupiter has a native token, which I think is a governance token, but there's also a meme coin associated with Jupiter called the WEN token that I think someone from the community just launched. Hmm. And that token is also quite valuable. Its market cap is in the hundreds of millions, but it has like no formal affiliation to the DEX at all. It's really just a meme coin. And so I think like that could be a pattern that we see emerge more and more for these types of applications.
And the reason for a project to do this would be basically to fundraise. Like you launch a meme coin to make money for your project, even though the meme coin itself isn't being used in the app or protocol itself?
I'm not sure if it's for fundraising. And I'm not sure actually like if projects can even do that in a compliant way. I think anyone who's exploring the legal and regulatory issues around meme coins should definitely talk to our chief legal officer, Jake Travinsky. I think in my view, like the core value proposition of having a meme coin is really around attention and growth hacking and being able to bootstrap additional attention to what you're building. Because meme coins are really good at that. They're really good at garnering a lot of attention very quickly. And if a project is able to do that, it has benefits for their core product.
So you mentioned these meme coins with market caps in the hundreds of millions of dollars. How can that, you know, like, how can that happen? like, where does that value come from? Is it just, you know, a reflection of what we've been talking about, you know, communities banding together? Is it a reflection of, like, maybe meme coins are, like, overhyped right now? What are your thoughts on these valuations?
In my view, meme coins reflect the attention that is being given to them and translate that attention value into economic value. So I think of meme coins as attention assets, where they capture the value of attention in real time. And so someone who's buying a meme coin is basically expressing their belief that that particular meme or that meme coin is going to grow in popularity, meaning it's going to rise in the attention that is given it. And so, like, that's, you could sort of extrapolate from that and say the same is true of NFTs, the same is true of most crypto tokens, where they are basically a reflection of the attention that surrounds them.
Yeah. So in that sense, with, you know, how quickly attention fades, I mean, that's where all the risk comes from. I mean, something that is popular today, you know, will very quickly or may very quickly fade tomorrow. So I think that's maybe the difference between a governance token, you know, a token that's linked to some sort of actual utility, some actual value that's being created by a protocol, versus a meme coin, which, like you said, it's, you know, its value comes from how popular that meme is, and, you know, whether there are people who are rallying around it or not.
Yeah, I would challenge that and say that most governance tokens are also memes, because most people probably don't ascribe much value to governance at all. And zooming out from that, like, a lot of assets that we accord value to in the real world are not really backed by anything tangible. Like, the US dollar is no longer backed by the gold standard. It's not a claim on anything tangible. And so at some level, all of these assets just trade based on the collective belief that we have in their value, Bitcoin too. And so, like, you know, you could say everything is based off of the attention and the collective belief of a community behind them. Meme coins just happen to have a funny image or meme, or, like, you know, this kind of, like, internet story around it, versus originating from the real world. And I think internet communities can be really sticky, actually. Just as sticky as any, like, product or application. So, in terms of being backed by collective attention, I actually think that can be quite enduring. And if you look at the top meme coins by market cap, like, many of those have existed for many years and have been valuable for many years.
Yeah, no, that's definitely a great point. But I don't know. To me, I think the ability to really capture attention from memes for many years, I think there are just, like, very, very few meme coins with no, like, actual value product or, you know, like service behind them that can deliver that. And yeah, like you can't bet whether one or the other will actually have that lasting power. While governance tokens, yeah, like I agree, most of them are pretty useless, but there is this expectation that down the line, there you'll be able to access the actual, you know, value being created by the underlying protocol. So, and there's kind of that regulatory risk and aspect that makes developers and founders not kind of break that link, that really direct link between the token and the like protocol revenue. But I think anyone who is holding governance tokens is expecting that at some point, you know, they will have access to that value. So I don't know. I think to me that's kind of a fundamental difference between a governance token and a meme coin, kind of that real revenue that's being generated by a protocol that's behind that governance token.
Yeah, I mean, I see that. I think that's like the historical state of meme coins. I think mm-hmm. going forward, what we're seeing more and more of is meme coins evolving and having more utility in the ecosystem and being adopted by various applications and potentially having a revenue story around them in the future, or some sort of like ability to become more valuable in the future. Like there's a number of tokens that I mentioned in my piece where there's like a buy and burn mechanism so that the token supply actually becomes deflationary over time. I think that's going to become more prevalent. And so the lines between a meme coin versus like utility token are going to become increasingly blurry.
Super interesting. Yeah. And it ties back to what you were saying about how all these different apps are integrating meme coins and finding utility for them. So yeah, like the lines are definitely getting more and more blurry.
Yeah.
You know, going forward, looking at what is seemingly going to be a crazy year for crypto, what are some of the trends that you're interested in?
For sure. There's a number of trends that we're really interested in and like keeping our eyes and ears out to want to invest in and also want to participate in as users. I am very interested in asset first social, what I mentioned of like kind of social networks that put this desire for profit at the center of their value proposition. We call them socioeconomic networks to contrast them with pure social networks. Hmm. Examples of this are, I've been spending a lot of time on Fantasy.Top, which is this new social game built on Blast, where users can basically play Fantasy, but using crypto influencers and build a deck and compete in tournaments to see if their deck of crypto influencers does well on Twitter. Hmm. That's been really fun. We're also really interested in marketplaces in general. One specific trend within marketplaces is headless marketplaces that are distributing locally, for instance, through Farcaster or through Frame, but where the underlying liquidity is on chain and pooled globally. We think that is like just a very fundamental paradigm shift from marketplaces, where historically users had to go to a marketplace website as a destination and transact. We think that could significantly shift in a world of composability where people can much more easily transact in a social feed. We're spending a lot of time in the Farcaster ecosystem. We're really interested in applications that use Farcaster as distribution or projects that are building new frames, new clients. And then generally, like we're tracking a lot of new and emerging ecosystems like Solana and Blast and Base and monitoring what gets developed in those worlds.
Very cool. And then finally, I'm interested in your take on crypto's role in society. Like, you know, if everything goes right, crypto continues to become adopted, what does that look like?
I think it looks like a world where user ownership becomes prevalent and users are able to participate in the value that they create digitally. So that ties back to our founding thesis and vision of the firm, which is to invest in new networks that turn users into owners. And so if that vision is successful, I think the way crypto touches a billion users is that a billion users all own crypto assets, whether that asset is an NFT or a song or a piece of digital land, or it could be anything else. But basically, users become owners en masse at scale, and they're able to participate in that value appreciation.
Very cool. Very inspirational. Lee, thank you so much for taking the time. This is probably, I don't know, the smartest conversation about meme coins. Like you really put a lot of thought into how these new assets can develop, the models around them. And yeah, I just think it's a fascinating development in crypto. So thanks for joining me to talk about it.
Yeah, thanks so much, Camilla. It was great to be here.